The thing is, Yotpo is very well connected. People laugh because I always say we're the most promiscuous solution in the ecosystem. We're not promiscuous. We just have open APIs. It makes people laugh and people love it.
To people who are not in tech, they're going to be like, what the fuck?
I know. I could go, God, yeah. People say that to me anyway.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the partner manager, Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Good, thank you. That was a bit of a mouthful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so glad to have you on today. We like to start with a little icebreaker. Mm-hmm. What did you want to be growing up?
God, that was an odd one. My mum wanted me to be a vet. Mm-hmm. I most probably wanted to be a dancer, you know.
A dancer?
Never said that out loud before either.
we've had some interesting answers. Any specific type of dance? Backing dancer? Tap?
There is a story behind that, but I won't go into that. But I think it was like I did gymnastics and then somehow I ended up in a modern tap dancing. Well, whatever it was. And yeah, that shot that.
Okay, so you wanted to be a dancer. Now you're a partner manager. Can you briefly talk to me about your employment journey up until this point?
Wow, this is going to be a bit of a journey. So,
did you go to university?
I went to university.
What did you
say? But I only went to university I always wanted to go to university. My dad wanted me to go to university. But I used to love art, and I used to do exceptionally well. You saw the wreath yesterday.
Yeah.
You made wreaths in the office yesterday.
Yeah, full disclosure, we are colleagues. We do work together currently.
So we're not just best friends. So I was into art, and then my dad was like, that's not really going to get you the income that you want, first and foremost. Not saying it wouldn't. My dad said that. He's very traditional.
Yeah.
So I think the closest thing back then, or the natural progression, was I think I applied for fashion marketing and then I got in for advertisement and marketing management. Where was it first? Leeds. But I failed Leeds because I was doing too much partying. Moved to Manchester.
That was just down the road, yeah.
And it was closer to home, so okay. I thought I'd keep myself in check because I knew it a lot better. And the nightlife, well, it is good, but maybe not as underground as Leeds. And yeah, I did my degree in advertising and marketing management. When I left uni, I had always been working in restaurants in the back of it. And then my family, my cousins and stuff have always been like executive chefs. So I know the hospitality industry well. Saying that right. And I went to Australia. Mm-hmm. And my cousin got me a job in his best friend's restaurant. And then I started doing the marketing there. Okay. And then I was working for a restaurant group in Australia, the next thing I knew. And I was doing social media marketing before social media kind of took off. Doing kind of like the websites, building them on WordPress, that type of thing. And then I ended up doing that for a year and a half before deciding it was time to come home. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't decide. Visas were very difficult. And I didn't want to be tied to a company for 4 years to stay.
Yeah.
But we won't get into political stuff like that. So I came back and then I literally went into the head office of the restaurant I used to work at when I was 15 and 16. And then I actually got a lucky break, really, because I was as a marketing exec and my manager got fired.
Okay.
I won't tell you what for.
Okay. So much mystique in this story.
And then, so I ended up becoming the marketing manager of this big restaurant group, social media manager. They'd gone from a huge rebrand, they'd been invested in. And then I went from just doing social media to all of a sudden opening the restaurants. Mm-hmm. That's when I realized I was good with people, building relationships, kind of selling. It's an easy sell when you're trying to get people to soft launches. Soft launches are the free nights when restaurants open. And then from there, I opened about 8 restaurants, marketing-wise, PR. So that got me a lot of experience very quickly. And I was working under a consultant, a PR consultant, who was kind of like my boss. who's still a very good friend to me today, and she taught me everything I knew really on how to build relationships quickly, how to commercialize them, how to, you know, do even word of mouth marketing, PR, how to play the game. And then I thought, well, I got cocky and thought I'd go into sales. So I then, well, I got a magazine in to do a paid campaign for a relaunch of a restaurant. I'm using the word restaurant quite a lot here. So they actually then poached me for a job as business development. And that was when I went into my first sales role. Okay. So that was, you know, picking up the phone, calling restaurants, calling anything in the luxury lifestyle arena to try and get them to buy pages in this magazine. Mm-hmm. Obviously working out all the deals in between, because I don't know whether you know this, when you buy advertising, you go on kind of a service level agreement. And that service level agreement is, you know, write-ups, reviews, etc. So brokering all them. And actually, I wasn't very good at the sales side. I had all the relationships, but I couldn't sell to them. Where did I go after that? Ah, yeah. So then I was like, right, I'll go back to what I know and love, social media. So I went to an influencer marketing agency in Manchester. It was a startup. It had just been invested in. It was a team of 4 or 5. And I went in as client services manager. And with it being quite small, I felt like I was partly running the place. But that was new business, client relationships, not only selling, but making sure that those relationships were maintained. Mm-hmm. Then you were upselling them. And then I was there for quite a while, and that was working with big brands back then. So like Blank's toothpaste, I think they're still around in Boots. Fake tan brands, that's where my love of fake tan came from. all kinds of stuff like that. So that was really when I started going into e-commerce, FMCG brands, fashion brands. I did actually have a little bit of a break because I went, I went to Barcelona and did some TV work, but we'll cover that another time. Yeah. I'll keep that off camera. And then that's when I reevaluated my life and I thought, right, I need to focus now. I've done quite a lot in the space of 4 years. And I went agency side again for a very... Well, a unique agency. As everyone says, agencies are full service. It's not full service, especially when you're looking at marketing. Marketing has so many different layers to it. This was specifically in customer promotions. Mm-hmm. So it was working with brands or outreaching brands, business development again, but it was your big players like Beko, Samsung, even PCWs like Money Supermarket, etc., establishing that relationships by trying to get conversations around how to lower acquisition costs. For those that don't know acquisition costs, it's normally you're paying Google, you're paying
Facebook,
whatever it may be. You know,
money to acquire customers.
Yeah, you've got it.
Yeah.
To get them on site and convert them as customers. This was a very niche part. So typically, Beko, you go and buy a fridge freezer, you get cash back. You can, which is normally a call out value of 250 quid. That costs the brand 250 quid. But if you're clever with it and offer an alternative with a partnership thrown in, so say fridge freezer, HelloFresh, perfect, fill your fridge up when you've just purchased it. You can give them a £150 voucher, which may be the same as a call out value, but it's costing you a lot less because you then broker a deal mm-hmm. for the volume.
So what was the actual role there?
Propositions manager.
Proposition
partnership manager. So I was doing the sales and I was also doing the partnerships.
And then from there?
I ended up working with your pretty face. I was working on long RFPs. So these are, you know, Beko. To get in with Beko, you have to go through procurement. You have to go through all these different layers. And by the time a deal closed, I was falling asleep, where normally I should have been celebrating. Yes, the commission was good, but it was very, very long-winded. So I wanted something more fast-paced. One of my best friends who works for an e-com agency that I still work with or work very closely with, it was an award show with last week, said there's a role going in the agency for an account manager. So that would be, e-commerce account manager is looking after numerous clients, building their websites, maybe on a retainer to keep it updated, working with Bayo, for example, on a daily basis. They actually said, we don't think you're right for this role. You'd be a little bit, you're not right for it, but we think you'd be good at partnerships. So then I went out applying, found Yotpo, applied. 8 interviews later, I got the job. And then that was 2 years ago and I've not looked back really.
Have you been a partner manager the whole time?
Well, I started in partner growth. So partner growth is pretty much the same role. The only difference is you look after a larger group of, well, I'll tell you what a partner manager does firstly. So partner manager look after agencies that either build websites, develop websites, digital marketing agencies, you know, acquiring customers, email communications, SMS, all around that kind of vertical that looks after e-com. Mm-hmm. Partner managers look after those agencies. Predominantly, they start off by onboarding them, so educating them on the products. Mm-hmm. Yotpo is retention marketing, reviews, visual UGC, loyalty,
SMS, email, referrals, you name it. It does it all. Yeah,
One of the most powerful platforms. Educating on the products, build the confidence, they then refer the brands. The brands can be anyone from, you know, your Joseph and Joseph right through to Paul Smith, for example. So it's an exciting role. It's a lot faster than what I've used to be working in. So I look after those agencies. Where was I then?
You were describing the partner manager role and what you do.
So the partner manager role. So that's kind of the role. When you first start, well, when I first started, it was partner growth. So you're looking after agencies that typically look after smaller brands, therefore they're smaller value, so you have a higher volume, and they actually don't need as much personal touch. And then as you kind of work with those agencies, you narrow the top performing, the top referring, and with the most scope, and that's when you need a lot more one-on-one time with them. And that's when you go up to partner manager. So you then end up with around, say, 35 core, and then say 20 that you want to get into that 30 and make 50, if that makes sense.
And in partner growth, how many would it be?
Well, I think I'd like 250 in my...
Oh my God, 250 agencies.
Yeah, but I'm not underplaying the role, but you'd have one touch point with some of those agencies, or you'd be directly, well, just relying on email.
Okay.
Whereas now it's various different elements.
Understood. So you've given us a good kind of initial insight into the partner manager role. Talk me through a typical like day or week in the life of a partner manager. I feel like you're out a lot.
we are out a lot. There's no typical day or week. It's all different because the thing is with partners, every single agency, in order to get those referrals, have different ways that they approach partnerships. You have your commercial approach where they're rev share driven. Rev share is basically every referral an agency makes, they get a percentage of the contract value. Mm-hmm. So some, you know, turn that into a revenue model and be like, right, we want to get as many as possible. And it could, if you've got a good size agency, it could be like, well, I don't know, £50,000 a year. If it's SMS, I won't go into the technicalities of that. It's a usage-based product. You've got a large client base, it can be up to 100,000. Mm-hmm.
We were asking typical day or week.
It's a typical day. So every agency is different. So that's one approach. The other is, you know, they just want the best solution for the customers. So my typical day is I'd start off after the weekend to see if there's actually been anything on or any activity or anything that needed to be picked up on current clients, because that's also the other part of the role is you're actually helping to retain those merchants and making sure your agencies have a good level of support. So checking if there's been anything that's gone on over the weekend, you know, has there a campaign gone out that's wrong or something like that? Mm-hmm. Then that week we'll have a lot of maybe calls, face-to-face meetings, events, dinners with brands. The other thing is as well, our agencies like to be supported. So they want to acquire new customers. So we do a lot of hospitality. So dinners, we have partner parties, we have loads of different things. Not to say that that's not work, it is. Mm-hmm. But basically it's looking at your week, trying to plan your time as much as possible, because that week you could be spending 80% of it out of the office. So you need to make sure that you're on top of everything before you can do that. Mm-hmm. So
when you have a late night, do you still have to be in at like 9 a.m. the next day for work, or do they give you some grace and flexibility?
We don't really have any rules on that.
I'm not trying to find you out, by the way.
No, that's purely on us, basically. We manage our own time. You know when a lot of roles have the name manager? We are, although like I have a manager, but I am managing those agencies. I'm managing my workload. It is very competent. Mm-hmm. So I'm managing myself. So if I know it is going to be a late night, Christmas period's coming up, you know, we've got a lot of the partner parties. It's about giving back and giving a lot of time to those partners. There may be a Friday that I am getting up after 10.
Yeah. You also mentioned the fact you started work today at 6 a.m. or 6:30. So I think swings and roundabouts, right? As long as you get the work done, it's fine. We spoke about it being like the Christmas period and there's going to be a lot of like nights out. Do you feel like you need to drink a lot in order to forge some of those relationships, or can you go to events and not necessarily drink? And I'm thinking about people who might be thinking about going into partnerships and maybe they don't drink because it's like for religious reasons, as an example. Is it something that you must do? Is it frowned upon if you don't? What would your views be on it?
No, don't get me wrong. In the ecosystem, you know, there is a lot of drinking. There is a lot of entertaining. It's not forced.
Okay.
You know, you can go to an event. That event could carry on to a karaoke bar. It could do different kind of things. All work events can. Yeah. You don't have to drink. Okay. Although there's a lot of awards, everything in between. I am very into my fitness. So I'll go to an event. I've always been quite a people's person. So I, actually saying that though, now I've hit 30, I do get tired on some weekends. I'm like, I do not want to leave the house because it's, you know, you do, what's it, Alice Brigham or something, the test? Am I saying the right word? I don't know what Alice Brigham is. That's a brand, I think. But okay. It's a test basically to see what your personality is.
Okay.
It talks about introvert, extrovert.
Okay, yeah.
Some people can be both, some people can be introverts, etc. I've always thought, yeah, I'm an extrovert, which normally means you thrive off other people's energy. But now I've got to 30, given a lot of energy to a lot of people, like a day, sometimes I can have 5 calls and I can have an event. I do get tired, so I know my own boundaries. Mm-hmm. So I think it's finding your flow as a partner manager. It's finding your flow of what you want to do. If you want to drink, you can drink. You don't have to.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong, some love to have a drink.
What are the key strategies or techniques that you employ to build and maintain successful partnerships in the e-commerce space?
It is all down to the people. I'm lucky, right? So and also the other thing I've not mentioned, partnerships can be approached in 2 different ways. There's the very heavy commercial focus where it is, okay, I'm obviously giving you a great product. You're selling that great product. I'm giving you a high level of service. We're exchanging a lot here, but there is commercial targets to hit. And it can be, okay, I've invested a lot in educating your team. I need, you know, a referral. I am like that, but I'm very much focused on building relationships first. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I'm handed an agency, I want to go meet them face to face. I want to, you know, get to know the team. I want to try and touch as many people in that agency to have a relationship. Because it's not just about getting that deal over the line. It's also about how afterwards, and maybe I get a bit caught up in that as well. I like to be involved in the clients and have a relationship with the clients.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how you, well, building those relationships.
So basically nurturing.
Yeah,
it's not just the initial outreach. It's about nurturing them once you have them.
Yeah, completely. And then I think that makes the commercial conversations a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But now compared to when I first started, that wasn't how it was. You know, I was finding my feet. It was a lot quicker, a lot faster paced to my previous role. So I've only got to that point where now, so firstly, it's like learning what makes that agency tick, what is going to help get things flowing, what is going to make that relationship successful, because mm-hmm. everything's different, like I mentioned before.
Okay. In a fast-paced e-commerce environment, how do you stay ahead of the competition and adapt to changing market trends through your partnerships?
I think with Yotpo's a great company. You know, it's not, I have a lot of resource behind me. So like I'm talking about these events, they're not all organized by me. You know, partner marketing, you thought I was the marketing manager. You didn't even know my role. There's a lot of resource looking at those trends, keeping on top of them. The thing is, Yotpo is very well connected. People laugh because I always say we're the most promiscuous solution in the ecosystem. We're not promiscuous. We just have open APIs. It makes people laugh and people love it.
To people who are not in tech, they're going to be like, what the fuck?
I know. I could go, God, yeah. People say that to me anyway.
Google it.
But because we have so many partnerships, we're so aware of what's going on in the ecosystem. And also, when you have a strong base of agencies, you're constantly getting intel. And part of my role is to feed that intel back. Like, we're launching a new product, we'll have our agencies involved in, you know, design projects to tell us, you know, what they think that product should have. And that also adds value to our relationship. So one, it's not just, you know, going on LinkedIn and see what everyone else is doing. It's having a good, working for a good company that is actually invested in research, having good relationships that naturally just feed you back that information and intel, and also having a good support network.
Understood. What are some of the challenges you face when working with different types of partners, and how do you overcome them?
Do you know what? Most probably the worst...
Don't give me some bullshit. I don't have no problems.
I'm going to say, no, there is problems. And one of them may be, you do not click with everyone.
Yeah.
And it may be, you know, I don't click with someone. I don't click with that person because we just have a clash of personality. Mm-hmm. They're not saying we have an argument and end up having a slinging match or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But you can pretty much pick on that straight away. If that is the case, pretty fast, you've got to try and diversify and know someone else in that agency or develop a relationship. So, mm-hmm. you know, you've got to try and broaden your hero within that agency.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that doesn't even work. And it is a case, okay, maybe if it's, you know, it's a smaller agency. Or not that it's a smaller agency. Maybe, you know, I will hand it over to a colleague or we'll do a swap. Because sometimes that actually works in the capacity.
Change the dynamic.
Freshen it up, you know. Sometimes... And the other thing, not all agencies, I say this because we obviously work on quarters. It is a sales role. I know what are my successful quarters. What I mean by that is I hit target.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that Q1 and Q2 aren't typically the best, but then Q3 and Q4 are the best for me. Whereas my colleagues, they might be having a bad quarter when I am. But I think it's about having that freshen up, having that perspective. And also sometimes... agencies don't always have the referral, so it's appreciating that. And if you go to that agency sometimes and you can feel pressure because you're getting pressure because you're on a commercial target to push for referrals, it's about, you know, establishing they've got, you know, it's not the right time, mm-hmm. having a break or freshen up, hand over, or kind of find someone else in that agency.
You mentioned targets there, mm-hmm. right? What is your approach to... making sure that you hit your targets, and how do you overcome maybe like a negative quarter, as you've mentioned?
So approaching targets at the end of every queue.
Queue stands for quarter, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine.
I keep forgetting that.
It's like we're talking, you know, in the office, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I keep forgetting, that you actually know what I do. Well, I'm not partner marketing again. So first and foremost, it's planning. The other thing is in terms of a mentor and who I work under, Ellis on my team is great, and also my director. I'm not doing shout outs here, but anyway, my director, you know, they've been in the ecosystem for a long time. One of the things that since I've started Yotpo is like always plan out your quarter. What I mean by that is you'll look at your agencies, you'll look at the data from the, you know, how long they've been with Yotpo, and you can map out how, you know, how many referrals you can get off them. Another thing is that we do is like client mapping. We like to know what clients our merchants have, and you can look and be like, actually, I've done a lot of work for that client. I can expect those to close. So it's about mapping out what you think that quarter is going to look like. And then from there, it's about tracking. So reviewing that, you know, on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not having a great quarter, you know, it's not necessarily down to us or our agencies. There's bigger things out there, like what is going on in the industry.
Or the macro environment, right?
Like that's the word I was looking for.
I got you.
Macro environment, you know, this year, we're going into a recession. Well, we've been saying that for a year and a half. I think June, July, August this year definitely felt like we were going into a recession, but that soon changed. So there's different headwinds that come into effect. So it's also the macro environment, but then it's also having employers that understand as well, because you're not going to fire every quarter.
Yeah, and I think explain further with what you said there, I think you have a plan for the quarter, you review the plan and the process, and regardless of whether you're successful or not, you just need to make sure you're putting in the right inputs, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you continue to follow the right process, the results will come in the end.
Yes. Resilience.
Yeah, have some resilience.
Just the process.
How do you measure the return of investment and success of your partnerships? And what KPIs do you use to track their effectiveness? KPI stands for key performance indicators to the listener.
The holy grail in partnerships, especially in e-commerce, is referrals.
Okay.
That's the main tracker. So you're targeted with a certain amount. Partners, predominantly in any role within the ecosystem, account for between anything from 40 to 60% of all opportunities that come through the business. So that's the first key performance indicator.
So just like number, and when you say number of referrals, you mean number of like potential new clients?
No, brands introduced via
number
that partner.
Number of new brands, okay.
And then contract value.
Okay.
So that's the closure of the contracts. But things change that impact that. So, you know, the weight of how that rewards me can change, basically depending on, you know, what's going on in the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
They are the key performance indicators. But then that rolls out across, you know, down to agencies. Have you targeted the right agencies? You know, have you predicted right? Are you close enough to your agencies to predict what is going to come from them? You know, are you doing all the minor, or not minor, but all the little roles around in your role in order to be able to forecast right?
Mm-hmm.
But so then it's about setting those targets of individual agencies. And then part of the role is as well, you don't pick those agencies, obviously their performance helps you pick them, but that helps you establish who is worth your time. In terms of measuring ROI, that is kind of replicated in what I first mentioned. Sales referred generally is your whole number and the contract values that you've closed.
Okay, that makes sense. And when what percentage of time do you spend, I suppose, training and giving people knowledge on the platform that we sell versus learning about other platforms or just understanding the specific agency and their process?
I think they kind of merge. Okay. Because in order to educate the agencies, you need to know what our competitors are doing anyway and what are the key differentiators. I don't like to go in with, you know, a very good place, because Yotpo and the product we work for is you know, extremely powerful. It is industry leading. If an agency comes to me, for example, and says, oh, we're thinking about this other provider, I will never say, oh, we're the better provider. Mm-hmm. I will list the comparables or the advantages.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think that's very much merged. But in terms of how educating my partners and then looking at competitors, I think that's around like 40% of my role.
Okay.
Spending time with different members of those agencies is, say, another 20%. And from that time, it's them looking at the strategies, because that's another part of my role. I develop the strategies or find out what that client needs, what are their problems at the moment, what are their pain points, and then develop strategies of how to overcome them. And that's how we get the kind of referrals.
Who are the main internal stakeholders that you work alongside? So do you do a lot of work with the sales team? Is it the marketing team? Is it customer success? Is it all of the above? Who do you typically see yourself doing the majority of your work with?
It can vary. The majority of the work is, we're complementary to the sales team, right?
Okay.
We're giving them, well, partners contribute to a lot of the, what's the word?
Mine's revenue.
Not revenue opportunities that the opportunities that they're working on.
Okay, cool. So the pipeline probably.
Yeah, the pipeline. Yeah. And then we're also trying to assist them close it, see if our agencies can input. So I'd say 40 to 45% is with the sales team. Co-marketing, we work very closely with our co-marketer. So I'd say that's around, you know, 20, 25. On the flip side, it's then the CSMs, customer success managers, shout out to you, and also the account managers. So they're working with the CSMs to cross-sell for the listeners out there. And I'd say, yeah, so what's that, 45, 20, 35%. So it's working with a lot of stakeholders within the business.
Okay. How do you balance your short-term goals, such as increasing sales, with long-term strategic partnerships that may take time to yield results?
The thing is, when you're looking at partnerships, and this is not the rule of thumb for all of them, from an agency being found, onboarded, you typically say that they can have a lifetime of around 5 years.
Until you've like milked them dry.
I don't see, well, you know, there's some agencies within Yotpo that, you know, they've been going the whole time the business has been going, and you know, that is a dream, but that's not always a case, especially with the macro environment, things going on, trends, etc. But I think half of it is, there's a lot of tuition as well. So as long as you've done your ground research on an agency, you know, they might be at 14, 15 employers. They're the target, really. And then it's about developing that relationships. Those relationships as well, by the way, and half the relationships I'm talking about turn into friendships, which makes the job hell of a lot easier. And some of my partners and some of my closest friends, for example, I'm going to a concert tonight. that is a hard question, but a lot of it is intuitive, based on also the research that you've done in the back. And also, you hear about agencies coming through, starting to perform, LinkedIn, noise, awards, you know, client wins, etc. So there's loads of different elements. So, but also your short term, because the thing is, your long term is to get these new agencies into your short term plans, right?
Yeah.
And that can happen in a quarter, or it can happen in a year. There's loads of different elements.
What is the most difficult part of being a partner manager, if you had to put it down to one thing?
You know what? Sometimes, this is not a negative either. Sometimes I feel, you know, like for you, for example, you work with your clients, you know, you're invested in, they're invested in you within work hours, and then you can go home. Because I work in the same capacity, but the partners become your friends, and then your friends go into your personal life.
Yeah.
So it can be quite not consuming. I absolutely love the ecosystem. Not saying that when we're outside of work, we're just talking about work, but it can become one big
blended. Yeah.
So it's managing that and just establishing the point of switching off being personal and then professional.
Understood. And a similar question, but asked a little differently. What would you say the most stressful thing about being a partner manager is?
Interesting question. I don't know why I said that again. I'd most probably say there is a hell of a lot to do. And, you know, working for a growing business as well. Yeah, Yotpo is a huge global company, but it is growing, you know. There's growing pains. And it's about being considerate of those growing pains and actually trying to shape them or overcome them for the future generations of Yotpo. I think that would be, it's just growing pains. And sometimes I can get, best advice I've had actually is I can get quite heated if something's annoyed me or something like that. It's literally take an hour away from that, come back and have a different perspective, or come and revisit something the next day. Mm-hmm. And also learning that not everything is in my control and I don't know everything, because sometimes you can feel like you do.
I always like to flip the question on its head. What would you say the most rewarding thing about being a partner manager is?
The friendships.
Okay.
That's quite simple.
Short, sweet. And
I'd say the friendships as well.
And very profound.
Friendships, but also, you know, I've had brands introduced to me and those brands are now friends, and there's nothing better than they're about to launch their new website and they call me like and say, we need some help from the platform. Mm-hmm. Our payment's gone down. And then I can jump on that and help them.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, go for a drink with them at Shoreditch House straight afterward.
Shoreditch House, I will not be endorsing you unless you run me some money. No, I'm messing around. To anybody who thinks about, who wants to think about getting into partner managing or partnerships.
Partnerships.
He's going to kill me. I'm getting it wrong. What would your advice be?
First of all, look at the industry you want to go in, because I've worked in various different industries. Not all of them have partnership function. Mm-hmm. Look at the product. Do some research on the sales cycle. Do you want to be working in something that is, you know, a long
sales cycle?
I don't know why my mind keeps going back. A long sales cycle, because if it's a long sales cycle, typically there's a lot of analytical different layers of the sales cycle to jump over, even as a partner. Look at those elements, or do you want to be in a fast pace?
Mm-hmm.
Also, then look at the price of the product of that vertical as well, because that could be a signification of what you're going to earn.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, if it's fast paced and it's, you know, half the price, you can still get to the same targets. It's just about volume. First of all, analyze that, and then just do research on the team. If you've never been in it before as well, I'd say try and look for a business development role or sales role.
Okay, that's a good piece of advice.
Well, that's what got me here, I think. You know, everyone has that time when they're on the phones being relentless, trying to get a sale through the door.
Showing resilience.
Resilience, yeah.
Yeah.
As I've said three times.
No. I just said it because I thought it was good.
Showing resilience, but, you know, a couple of members of my team, they've started in sales and then they've been actually, it's too transactional. I'm not saying that sales is, sometimes it's not. And then transitioning into partnerships.
Understood. We like to talk about emerging trends on the podcast. Are there any emerging trends or technologies that are influencing the partnerships ecosystem?
AI is constantly mentioned now. The application of AI in, that's the way that's emerging. So, you know, it was copywriting. So it would have been, you know, the text messages, the email marketing campaigns, the content writing that. Now, AI is much more than that. You know, you can ask it to pull your analytics. You can ask it to build your segments, or you can build your audiences. AI is going to be constantly evolving and it's constantly going to be there. So that's an ongoing trend. Also, I'd say in e-com, it's always the question of the platform. What's the fastest growing? So it's normally following what's going on with Shopify. Shopify, in terms of EMEA, are the fastest growing platform. You know, they're going after different markets, such as B2B.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about...
B2B stands for business to business. I'm just highlighting.
Just
because they might not know.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I keep forgetting. You know,
No. By the way, I'm just doing it. I'm just helping the listener. But you keep talking. It's fine.
Yeah, looking at the platforms, mm-hmm. what's going on there? Because there's always been a split, but, you know... Normally, different platforms service different sizes of business, mid-market, enterprise, SMB, small, medium businesses. Shopify and how they're going after B2B and also the enterprise market as well is an emerging trend.
Partners, obviously, like you said, they do a lot of socializing. What would you say are the core skills of successful people in partnerships?
Great smile, personability, resilience, hard work.
Mm-hmm.
That they come from my parents. My dad is, he's got a kind face and he's very cute and quiet, but he was very hard working. That's where I get that from. He didn't let me have a single day off school. So mm-hmm. that's my hard work ethic. Stayed in the same role for 40 years, you know.
Mm.
My mum, incredible smile, very personable. And I look like her. Uh-huh. So I got that side of my personal ability from her, and be able to talk to anyone and wanting to talk to anyone, not just the fact that I'm from up north as well. But I think it's those two blended together. They're the two main traits. You've got to be hardworking because you've got a hell of a lot on your plate, and you know, you're doing so many different job functions. You're involved in so many different conversations internally before you look externally.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And being personable.
personable, yeah.
I was about to ask you, what would you say the single biggest factor in your like success has been in your career to this point? But I feel like you're going to say you're small. Is that what you're going to say? No,
it's not my smile. People are going to be watching this like, he's got a shit smile. You know what? I was told from a young age I was personable, but I didn't actually believe it until I got to around 26, 27. And I think that's accelerated in this role as well. Because I think being able to talk to anyone, being able to, first of all, have that conversation and then develop a relationship, it's being able to do that, which is important for any partnership, a partner manager.
So in terms of actually developing relationships with people, what would you, how do you do it? Like, do you have any key tips? So for me, when I'm talking to people,
you drop a crack joke.
Yeah, I could be self-deprecating, or I've actually got quite a good memory. Mm-hmm. So typically when someone tells me something once, I might see them a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks down the line. And, you know, whether it's a client of mine, I might be like, oh, it was your daughter's birthday, or like, you know, something quite specific.
It is that, but without sounding like you're commercializing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because that is it, but I'm not doing it with an agenda.
Yeah.
But that is the end goal.
I'm not doing it with an agenda.
I know you're not. I'm not saying you are, but it is exactly what you've just said.
Yeah.
But when I, obviously I'm wanting to develop that, we're there for work.
Yeah.
But I don't go in and like, I'm going to remember that person.
Yeah. It's just about having genuine
interest, listening, and being warm, I think, it's for, first of all, people to... And it'd be easy to talk to as well. You are, apart from, yeah, the jokes. good music choices, even though you don't have any playlists. I asked him for some of this.
Do you know, look, I'm going to share something with the listener. I don't listen to music anymore. I mean, I only listen to music at the gym or
that's not very often.
In the office. I listen to podcasts. That's what I do. I like to learn.
You're getting influences. You're getting...
That's it. I'm always learning. Switching gears... You've mentioned the fact that you didn't take a day off school, which is crazy, by the way. Everyone takes like one day. But do you have any productivity hacks?
Go to bed early. Get up early. But the problem is don't go up too early because you wake up too early then.
Wait, what? What did you just say?
Go to bed early, wake up early, but don't go too early because you wake up too early and that can be lonely.
So how early do you go to sleep?
Just after 9.
Damn.
Wake up at 5:30. Obviously, unless work's getting in the way.
Okay.
And then I also think, and I think people will laugh at this. The gym is my therapy.
Okay.
Wow. I think that's great for productivity. It makes you feel great. Also, I could go on for days actually. Eating well.
Yeah.
And having a good network of friends.
Do you know what? It's funny that you say eating well. I do find when I eat a lot of sugar, I don't have a good night's sleep. But I still do it anyway. So make of that what you will. Having the discipline to eat well, because I don't.
That is true.
I'm sharing a lot of personal stuff on this episode, by the way. A lot
that
more
you
than
eat too many sweets.
Yeah, a lot more than I've shared in other episodes.
Don't go to our office. Because
yeah, you can see why I crumble.
But yeah.
Do you enjoy what you do?
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I love the relationship I make. I find it natural now.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I've never not found it natural, but a lot of the time I don't feel like I'm going to work.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy it. On some people on Sundays get, is it dread? Work dread? Yeah. I don't have that.
Everyone gets a little bit of dread.
Obviously, if I've seen something come in over the weekend and I'm like, oh God, that error, I've got to pick that up, or, you know, maybe I forgot something, but no.
Do you feel fairly compensated for what you do?
Yes.
Would you be open to sharing like a range for what a partner manager can earn roughly?
You know, if it's a tech solution, your base can be anything from 40 right the way up to like 75.
Yeah,
and then
your
OTE can be, you know, 65 up to 100.
Wow.
But then, because it's a sales role as well, you can have your accelerators. But then you can look at other verticals and you'll be like, why are you not in that one? So, or other industries, you know, if you look in the Salesforce arenas, you can go anything from like 120K base up to 650, But the thing is, you might be having two deals a year that are rolling,
yeah,
and the commission. It depends what you want in relation to your salary, if it's fast paced. But yeah, I would say, but also I'll say the split. So you're normally working to, it's around either 60-40.
As in 60% is your base.
But yeah, and then 40% is your OTE.
Yeah, and when Matt says OTE, I know he's going to hate me for elaborating again. He means on target earnings. But I didn't know what that was, you know. When I was first applying for a job, I'd see like recruitment, 100K OTE. But they wouldn't actually tell you what that
the base is.
It's like, yeah, and it's like, you've got to hit your targets, you've got to do X, you've got to do
That's
Y.
That's also, research that as well, if you're getting into it.
Mm.
Because exactly, if you go and look at a partner manager role and you see, they'll have the OT call out value.
Make sure you're clear on what the base is.
Yeah, the base. And your accelerators, what percentage, etc. Accelerators are if you hit target and go over the target.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have a good work-life balance? So I know you mentioned the fact that it can feel blended at times. Do you think you've got a good work-life balance?
Yeah. It is very blended still. But yeah, I do, you know, I can be sometimes reply to messages at 9 o'clock on my phone on the sofa. I do need to get better at that. But I do have a work-life balance, for example. The good thing is as well, say I go on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And I booked off 2 weeks. Now I could be on that holiday and there is stuff that I need to jump on, you know, and I can claim those holidays back. I think with partnerships, because a lot of your partners are your friends, there's always going to be that area of it being blended, if that makes sense.
How do you unwind?
I like to travel, like to go on holiday. But everyone says that broadly, don't they?
No, you mentioned the gym. So the gym is one, right? You said it helps you focus.
Yeah, I go to the gym. I love a good sauna.
Okay.
Barry's Boot Camp. I like trying nice restaurants.
Okay.
Lillian Bum's my favourite at the moment, if that's how you pronounce it.
What type of food is it?
Israeli, right by the office.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's around the corner.
Okay, nice.
And they've got a fast food version in Soho.
Okay. I was going to say, do you ever feel stressed or burnt out in the workplace?
Yeah, I have done, by all means. But it's like, for example, I think it was last weekend I was supposed to go to Paris. I'd booked it off and then the weather was awful. We had Hurricane Brenda or whatever she was called over England. And I cancelled my trip and I was like, oh, I'll go to work. But actually, I took that time off and I literally... 2 days straight, just walked around London, chilled out, ate good food, and, you know, just listened to my body.
So, yeah, I suppose that's what I was going to say. Like, when you do have these stressful times or feelings of burnout, what would your advice be to the listener?
Action it, because there's no point hiding it, because it only gets worse.
Okay.
And what I mean by that, it'll start affecting your sleep, your energy levels. Some people suffer with migraines. I've had those before. I've not had them in a long time, but that was my first indicator that I was burnt out, and this was in a previous role. But yeah, I think it's, you know, when you don't feel right, so don't just keep pushing through, because it'll just get worse.
Okay. We're almost at the end. Just a couple more questions before we get into the quick fire. First things first, like, at the start of the show, you mentioned the fact that obviously you started in social media and then you went through various roles before becoming a partner manager. To the listener, do you feel like it's a role that requires a university degree?
I'd say no, but when you look at a lot of the applications for the role, you'll see that, you know, that's required. I don't think it necessarily does, because when I'm thinking about me personally, when I look at my degree now, I look, that's so old fashioned.
Mm.
You know, it's just focused on budgets, etc. All the theories behind marketing, etc. I'd say technically no, but I think still, you know, you see it on CVs where it's like you need university.
Okay, and then in follow up to that, you're very I'd say prominent on LinkedIn. So, you know, you'll post when you've been to an event, or you'll do some thought leadership or some knowledge sharing. How pivotal do you feel LinkedIn is in helping you to do your job and maintain relationships?
You know what? When I first, my first foray with LinkedIn was sales. Sales nav popping into everyone's inbox. I think it depends. You have like these subcultures within LinkedIn. And my whole feed is people that I know, I see on a daily basis. They're doing very good with their algorithms. I wouldn't say it's hugely impacts my role.
Okay.
I see at the moment there is definitely a blend over with a lot of personal stuff on there. But I think nowadays a lot of people's work is their personal life as well.
Yeah.
So that's why it's becoming more of a sharing circle.
It's like Facebook.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like circle. It's a little bit like Facebook, but with people who I work with.
I'd say it's not a necessity of the role.
Don't kill me, by the way, LinkedIn champions and LinkedIn crusaders, but yeah.
I was just thinking, I think the thing is for me is now I develop relationship with the brand. That's something else that I thoroughly enjoy, mm-hmm. which makes another part of my role super easy for events and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it is great for sharing those events, seeing that, say, they are a great event. So when you invite them, they want to come. Mm-hmm. I think it is very much good, very good for the promotion of the activities around a partner manager role that are going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We do have a little bit of time left. And there was something else we actually did want to discuss.
Wow.
I obviously know you personally and we're friends. You've got a lot of followers on Instagram, right? And in our work, he's actually known as Blue Tick Brindley, BTB. So in a previous life, you've also done some content creation, correct?
Yes.
To any aspiring people that might want to put out social content, do you have any advice for them?
I think it's changed a lot since I did some brand collabs and whatever not, but I think it's been authentic. I look at it now and a lot of my friends are influencers and they're, you know, they'll in fitness to some of them or some of them are, you know, comedians. As long as you're authentic and relatable and that content replicates that or shows that, then that's what people engage with. And that may sound fluffy. What I mean,
it doesn't. We actually had someone on recently, and they said authenticity and consistency.
Yeah,
is what works.
I think it's not gatekeeping as well. I think with Instagram, you can get in this rabbit hole, you know, of perfect lives and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe your grid is that, but I think it's being authentic on the other elements of that channel, your stories, etc.
To being able to show the downs,
A little bit of negativity is good.
Yeah. I agree.
Not everyone's perfect.
Final question before we get into the quick fire round. Where does Matt Brindley see himself in the next 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years. A medium told me I'd be living in Ibiza, but I'm not. I don't think that's true. I think I'll definitely be e-com. I think I'd like to be I know I'd want to be a consultant.
Okay.
So doing things on my own terms more so, and working on a lot, being more focused. So maybe working with five or six brands, helping them expand, go through growth, you know, advising, and using all the expertise that I'm building at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I did have the idea of starting an agency called The Blondes, but I just need to find another one to go with. Someone to join me who's blonde, really.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay,
so I would like an agency, but more so a consultancy.
Okay, so we'll check back in 5 to 10 years to see if you've been able to make that happen.
I'll still look the same. You'll still look old. No, you look you're the age.
Matt, on that note, thank you so much. Are you ready for the quick fire round?
Yeah, what is it?
Work from home or work from the office?
Office.
Money or happiness?
Happiness.
So people always hesitate on that.
But money can make you happy, but it's very short-lived. And believe me, money has made me happy, but it doesn't make you truly happy.
Okay. So there's different types of happiness.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good name of a book. Favourite day of the week?
Oh, difficult. Thursday.
Time in a group or time alone?
Time in a group, followed by time alone afterwards.
Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Future.
Yeah. A lot of people say, do you know what? Pretty much everyone says that, to be fair. Favourite book?
Oh my God, I actually prefer this. The Chimp Paradox.
The Chimp Paradox. Yeah. Interesting. I'll take a look at that. Night out or night in?
You know what? Night in at the moment.
Okay. Who has it easier, men or women?
That's a difficult one.
Not if you ask.
I know. People. Well, a lot of my friends are female, and they would say male.
No, really? Name a book that you think everyone should read.
Well, I've just said my favourite one, so I think that should be The Chimp Paradox.
Okay, cool. And then finally, are you listening to any good podcasts?
You're going to laugh when I say this. What's that? Nip Tuck Pod.
Okay, you've told me about that one before, actually.
Yeah.
What's it about?
I think a lot of podcasts can take note of them because they're very authentic. They don't look like what... They don't... What's the word? Look like two beautiful girls.
Yeah.
They're not...
They don't look stereotypical. Well,
yeah, they're not stereotypical as soon as you listen to the podcast and it's raw and honest. Some of the topics are debatable, but honestly, I laugh out loud listening to them.
Okay, so the Nip Tuck Podcast. Matt, this has been really, really great.
That's personal podcast, by the way. That doesn't reflect my professional listening.
Okay, just so we're clear.
But everyone will have a laugh if you listen to it.
We do have a closing tradition on this podcast.
What do I have to do?
It's just a question, mate. It's nothing. You ain't got to do anything. Don't worry. It's just answer this question. Knowing what you know now, and with everything that you've been through, what advice would you give your 16-year-old self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
Well, I covered something off at the beginning. My dad said, go and do marketing advertising management. I think I would, if I hadn't listened to that advice, I would be doing something very different and most probably doing something art design focused. But the advice I would give, because I've always took note of other people's opinions or what I think they think about me, I'd not listen to any of that or any of those thoughts in my head or whatever people have said to me or what I think people expect me to be like.
So just do you.
Do you, yeah.
Okay.
Which is easier said than done because you're always going to be influenced at that age. But yeah, do what you want to do.
Matt, I love it. Where can people find you? Socials. Sorry, not your address. Oh. He looked at me like, what am I supposed to invite people to my house?
So tonight, LinkedIn, Matt Brindley.
Okay.
Instagram, Matt Brindley.
Okay. That's it. All right, thank you.
Do you want my postcode?
No. Matt, this has been great. Thank you for being so open. Thank you for being honest. Thank you for giving us an insight into the role of a partner manager.
Not marketing,
just so we're clear. Guys, if you've got to the end of this podcast, number one, thank you. Number two, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, comment, share, show love. At What My Best Friend Does. At WMBFDpod. And with that, that's another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.